The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch crushing! Deep left field! This is way back! Welcome on!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
Welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today on Tuesday, April 12th. Frank Stanfield joined by Scott White here to recap all of Monday's action. We had some exciting pitcher performances. A reliever who averaged over 100 miles per hour. No big deal, you know. Hunter Green just did that as a starter over the weekend, but I want to talk about this reliever, Team Name Tuesday, and much more. I've got my first, Scott, in the Oh My Goodness Gracious rotation. Many listeners sent this one in. Our player of the night will be brought to you by none other than the great Hawk Harrelson.
You gotta be blaming me!
Multiple people sent in that exact soundbite of Hawk Harrelson, so I'm a big fan. I grew up hearing him in the background. I'm like, who is this guy? He's awesome. Mercy. And anytime that we can work Hawk Harrelson into the podcast, I am about it, Scott. So why don't you kick us off here? You're, oh my goodness gracious, or I guess you've got to be bleeping me, player of the night.
Yeah. I am going to go with Joe Adell, who finally did something when he, you know, in an alternate universe, he wouldn't have done something because he wasn't originally in the Angels lineup again. Left out against a righty. But then Mike Trout came down with a tummy ache. He had a stomach bug and it was scratched from the lineup. So Adell was inserted and he hit his first home run. He hit his first home run and it was off that righty, Eliezer Hernandez of the Marlins. That game is not over yet. So potentially Adell could do more, but he's 1-for-3 with that home run and a strikeout. And it's something, you know, it's something. It's if he, every time he does something when he's in the lineup, it's going to make it harder for Joe Maddon to sit him the next time. And I think it's important because, you know, in some of the deeper leagues we play in, five outfielder leagues, you know, leagues where 300 plus players are rostered, let's say. Probably not much of a question whether or not you hold on to Adell, but anything shallower than that, I think it is a serious question at this point because you only have so much roster space, obviously, and based on his usage so far, he's unusable in those shallow leagues until he gets more consistent playing time. You want to hold on to him for the upside, but you got somebody like Stephen Kwan out there just begging to be picked up. I'd like to preach patience on Adell. I realize that in some circumstances it may not be possible. You got to understand how your league works. You got to understand how plausible the idea of stashing anybody is in a league like yours. But if it's possible, I think you need to hold on to Adell.
Scott, I had people on Monday asking me what to do with Joe Adell in 15-team, five outfielder leagues. So to me, yeah, that's probably an overreaction. You know, obviously, it's been a roller coaster ride, no doubt, with Joe Adell thus far. You know, in and out of the lineup, looking more like a platoon bat. And then, of course, he gets the start on Monday because of Mike Trout's tummy ache, as you mentioned. And he hits a 430-foot homer, you know, not just like a wall scraper. This was a bomb to right center field. So very impressive to see that from Joe Adell. Scott, I think where I'm at right now, any five outfielder leagues, I'm going to hold Joe Adell. I think even in three outfield category leagues, I'd like to hold him if I can. Three outfield head-to-head points leagues, if somebody like Steven Kwan or Connor Joe is available in that format, I think I would be okay making the swap.
I think you have to in that format. I mean, that's the better format for both Kwan and Joe because of their plate discipline. I think you have to in that format. But I pretty much agree with that breakdown. I think in some three outfielder category leagues, it may still be hard to hold on to Adele. But I'd prefer to do it. I mean, I was just saying yesterday that I'd like to hold on to CJ Abrams in every league where I can. I think he's in a very similar spot. He was out of the lineup again for the Padres, another left-hander on the mound. But they're facing nothing but righties the rest of the week. So, you know, we may be on the verge of seeing CJ Abrams make himself indispensable, or he may not, you know? And I ended up having to drop him in one of those shallower leagues, a 12-team points league. Again, I think you can justify dropping him more in points than categories. But I didn't like to do it. You know, I want to hold on to that upside. I think he could be a difference maker even in a points league, potentially. But you have to treat roster space as not just, okay, these are the players I want. These are the players that I'm at risk to losing to somebody else if I'm not protecting them. And I don't think in those shallower leagues, Abrams or even Adele is necessarily in that spot where you risk losing. Sure, if they go off, you know, over a 3-game span, you could very quickly lose them to somebody else. But right now, I don't think that's much of a risk.
The last point, Scott, on Joe Adele is I saw earlier that Taylor Ward is expected to be activated from the IL when first eligible this weekend. So that's just another obstacle in this puzzle that we're trying to figure out right now regarding Joe Adele.
I think I saw it was Madden reiterated that Taylor Ward is his right fielder when he comes back.
Yeah,
I think I saw.
So, look, this could be cleared up by the weekend, too. If we get to Friday and Taylor Ward is activated and he starts all 3 games and Joe Adele doesn't play at all, then obviously that will change our outlook on him. But let's see what happens the rest of the week for Joe Adele. And Brandon Marsh, by the way, I feel like it's worth mentioning. 2 hits tonight, a double, a home run, and he has not struck out over his first 4 games. Last year, the biggest issue for Brandon Marsh was that he struck out over 30% of the time. And it's not really something we saw much in the minors from him. And it was a huge issue last year. So he's only 24% rostered, and I think someone who should be on our radars right now as well.
So he has struck out once. Marsh has. And I'll also
tonight point out, or
no, just for the season. You said over his first 4 games, right?
Yes.
No. Yeah. 1 strikeout for Marsh. Yeah. But he also struck out 18 times in 43 plate appearances this spring. So it's not, I'm not sure I make anything of that yet. It's not like Stephen Kwan, who didn't strike out at all this spring and also hasn't struck out during the regular season.
Speaking of Stephen Kwan, Scott, look, I feel like we need to keep talking about him until this roster rate just climbs higher. He's 49% rostered. Another strong performance on Monday, 1-for-3 with a triple, 3 RBI, 2 walks, 2 runs scored, batting second once again. Of course, no strikeouts in this game for Stephen Kwan. And then the other one is Connor Joe, 2-for-5, his second home run. This one came off of a righty in Greg Holland. Connor Joe
still on the road.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not at Coors Field.
Still just 38% rostered, and Connor Joe has started all 4 games for the Rockies. Again, like I broke down where I would add these guys over Joe Adele, but just in general, Scott, there are still outfielders that are rostered in too many CBS leagues compared to these guys. Mike Yastrzemski, Brandon Nimmo, Enrique Hernandez, those are all rostered in over 60% of leagues. I would drop any of them, all of them, for Stephen Kwan and Connor Joe.
Easily. Yeah, that's that needs to change. And, you know, I think it's a tough call whether you go Kwan or Joe. Kwan's getting all the headlines right now, so I think you're most at risk to losing him to somebody else. But I think Joe is going to be more impactful just because of where he plays his home games. And I think there's going to be higher power output there. But like playing time isn't an issue for either one of them. And you know, a lot of the players you're considering, a lot of those guys you're considering dropping or adding, they're not necessarily full timers yet. So that has to weigh into your consideration too. But yeah, I think they are both living up to the hype and then some. I say hype. I mean, how much did we hype Stephen Kwan before the season? I wish we had hyped him harder. You know, it wasn't clear what kind of role he was going to play for Cleveland. It wasn't clear he was going to make the team at first.
Yeah, I know we mentioned him. We mentioned him late as like a deep sleeper.
Yeah.
But yeah, not nearly enough. We didn't, we didn't really know what his role was going to be. But again, like after trading away Bradley Zimmer, that kind of reinstills some confidence in Kwan. Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially where they're batting him in the lineup. Joe Adell, by the way, just added another RBI double to his line on Monday night. So
there you go.
Two for four, double, homer, two RBI for Joe Adell. It's a really good game for him. Scott, one other name here I wanted to ask you about. Alex Kirilloff. I'm getting a lot of questions about him, too. 1-for-15 to start the year. Do you drop Kirilloff for Kwan, Connor, Joe, both?
Ooh, you know, in the podcast listeners league, which is a shallower league, 12 team points, 252 players rostered. I actually had briefly, I had entered a move to drop Kirilloff for Kwan. Not because I want to give up on Kirilloff, but because now is my chance to get Kwan. And Kirilloff was the only player I felt like I could drop. I ultimately changed my mind. I can't remember. I may have put in a move to drop Nestor Cortez instead. And in any case, did I win Kwan in that league? I don't think I did.
I think you did.
Oh, okay. I'll pull it. Who did I end up dropping for him?
I'll pull it up. But I thought okay. I thought I saw an email from someone today pointing out that you won Stephen Kwan. Yes, you did. For $3 out of a $100 fab budget, you dropped Nestor Cortez for him.
Okay. Yep. That was what I ended up switching it to. But it was Alex Kirilloff at one point. You know, a part of it is because it's a points league, and I try to keep my hitters to the extent I can justify it. I try to keep my bench hitter free. I try to make it mostly full of pitchers because they're always usable hitters to pick up if you ever need one. But, you know, I just like the upside of Kirilloff too much. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, well, I can understand needing the roster space for somebody else in a shallow league. It's kind of like Adele. Like, I still love the upside, slow start or not. I'd certainly rather hold on to Kirilloff if I can figure out a way to do it.
All right, player of the night for me, Michael Lorenzen. He looked awesome at home against the Miami Marlins in his Angels debut. 6 innings, 1 run, 0 walks to 7 strikeouts. He had 14 swinging strikes on 89 pitches. He threw 5 different pitches 11%+ of the time. So a very diverse arsenal for Lorenzen in this game. He had 9 ground ball outs. He hasn't consistently been used as a starter since his rookie season back in 2015. You might remember Lorenzen as a reliever with the Cincinnati Reds for most of his career, but now stretched out, starting for the Angels, and he looked fantastic in this start, Scott. He's 5% rostered, and he's only RP eligible on CBS right now, so if you play in a points league, he has that SPARP eligibility.
Yeah, I was really impressed. Obviously, the velocity was down with the role change, but 14 swinging strikes on 89 pitches, and the breakdown was interesting. He has 6 pitches. I mean, you can't expect to make use of 6 pitches in a relief role. You expect a pitcher's numbers to get worse going from a short role in the bullpen to obviously extending out and being a starter. You expect him to lose a little something statistics-wise. But when you're not able to make use of your full arsenal in a relief role, that opens the door for you to actually improve with the move to the rotation. And early returns for Lorenzen suggest that may happen for him. I'm not sure how badly I want to pick him up just yet. Like, he's not up there with Tyler McGill or even Merrill Kelly for me, unless it's a situation, obviously, where you need a relief pitcher in a points league, relief pitcher eligible pitcher, I should say. But it was pretty interesting.
Interesting for sure. Again, he's going up against the Miami Marlins. So while we expect the Marlins lineup to be a little bit better this year, I think it's still looked at as a good matchup. So good to see from Michael Lorenzen in his debut. I want to kind of compare him to a few other pitchers who might be available, Scott, who pitched on Monday. And Nick Martinez making his return to the majors for the Padres, 5 innings, 1 run, 6 strikeouts. He had 13 swinging strikes on 83 pitches. He is only 15% rostered. And then the other one is Jameson Taillon, who had a strong start at home against a really tough Toronto Blue Jays lineup. His one mistake, a 2-run homer that he allowed to George Springer, but 5 innings, 2 runs, 6 strikeouts to 0 walks for Taillon. He had 17 swinging strikes on 72 pitches. 9 of those came on his 4-seam fastball. He is much more rostered on CBS, 59% compared to those other two. What do you think about just these three in general, Scott? Maybe rank them. Jameson Taillon, Nick Martinez, Michael Lorenzen.
So I'm bringing some bias into this. I'm because all three were good, I'm still inclined to rank them as I originally would have, which is Nick Martinez 1. You know what? I am going to move Lorenzen up to 2. Nick Martinez 1, Michael Lorenzen 2, and Jameson Taillon 3. I mean, 17 whiffs on 72 pitches, especially against the Blue Jays, that's amazing for Taillon. But beyond that, I don't really, like, I'm not seeing anything else that suggests he's different from a year ago. You know, it's not like the velocity is up. It's not like the spin is up. The pitch selection, you know, it's not that different. Maybe we're just a year early and he wasn't totally comfortable with his new delivery yet, and becoming comfortable with it isn't really showing up in the metrics, but it is in the results, you know? Like, that's possible. I'm not ready to say that after only one start, though, for Taillon. But Nick Martinez is a pitcher I was warming up to already, and I've flirted with picking him up in a few leagues. He was in the hierarchy of waiver pickups for me, and it just didn't make it far enough down the list for me to add Nick Martinez. But I was impressed with what he did this spring, obviously impressed with what he did in Japan. The Padres were too, clearly giving him a 4-year deal. And of those 13 whiffs on 83 pitches, I like the breakdown of that too. 3 on the fastball, 4 on the cutter, 5 on the changeup. You have 3 pitches that are capable of getting swings and misses. You can be pretty successful. So he would be my preference of those 3 to pick up. And he's also relief pitcher eligible if that matters to you in a points league.
But all of these names, Scott, are behind Tyler McGill, Merrill Kelly, and what about Kyle Wright? Would you put Kyle Wright ahead of these as well?
No, he's similar. I think I would take Nick Martinez over Wright. Not sure about the others. Obviously, if you need the relief pitcher eligibility from Lorenzen, maybe you do him over Wright as well. But yeah, it's part of a group of pitchers that I like what we've seen from him in the one start, but you know, based on their histories, I need to see a little more.
Yeah, especially for Nick Martinez too. Like, his next 2 starts, even if you add him, I don't know that you want to start him because he's going up against the Braves this weekend. And then looks like as of now, it's very early to project this, but the Dodgers next week for Nick Martinez. So 2 tougher matchups coming up for him. This isn't a starter, Scott, but I wanted to mention his name early on. Yoan Duran. I mean, what he did against the Seattle Mariners in this game. He came in a 4-run lead in the 9th inning. Tyler Duffy pitched in the 7th. Joe Smith pitched in the 8th. Duran averaged 100.8 miles per hour on his fastball. He's 19% rostered, and he's the opposite right now. He's actually only starting pitcher eligible. He was a starter as a prospect coming up, so he'll need, I guess, 8 more relief appearances to gain that relief pitcher eligibility. But the fact that he pitched the 9th inning in a 4-run game gives me a little bit of confidence. I still don't know for sure with Rocco Baldelli, but I kind of feel like maybe Duran's going to be the guy here for the Minnesota Twins.
Yeah, I don't know. It's possible. But it actually wasn't a safe situation, and he may have just been one of the more rested relievers, you know?
True.
So yeah, I mean, he's definitely somebody I have my eye on, and I could see that happening at some point. I just don't think we're going to get much clarity from Rocco Baldelli for a while.
Okay. If you had to just take a guess right now, who do you think gets in the next twin save opportunity?
So I need to do a better job of memorizing the names of the relievers in the Twins bullpen.
Yeah, they have Jorge.
The guy I'm thinking of.
Jorge Alcala, they have Tyler Duffy.
Yeah, Alcala's the one still. If okay. I had to p- pick a single Twins reliever to invest in. And again, I think it's going to be a mess for a while, but Jorge Alcala is the one.
All right, some news and notes. I missed this yesterday, but apparently Fernando Tatis said this weekend that he expects to resume swinging a bat in around 3 weeks. He's on the 60-day IL, which means the earliest date Fernando Tatis could actually play in a game this season is June 7th. Will that actually happen? That seems probably aggressive, but nice to see some good news for Fernando Tatis. Mike Trout, as we mentioned earlier, was scratched Monday night due to the same illness he was dealing with last week. Apparently, it's some kind of stomach issue. Doesn't seem anything too major for him. Luis Patino left his start Monday after recording just two outs. He was later diagnosed with a strained left oblique. Instead of going to the IL, Scott, a crusher, Blake Snell plans to play catch on Tuesday, throw a bullpen session Wednesday ahead of his start on Friday. So there's still a chance that Blake Snell does not go on the IL. So maybe we kind of slow down our hype a little bit on Mackenzie Gore.
I still think he needs to be rostered.
Okay.
You know, the shallow leagues that we talk about are usually points leagues where there's a greater demand for starting pitchers, obviously. So even in those leagues, I still think Mackenzie Gore needs to be rostered, because if his chance isn't right now with the Snell injury, it'll be right around the corner. And I think he's ready to go. I think he's ready to do real damage when his opportunity does get here.
Again, in Mackenzie Gore's first minor league start, 5 shutout, 2 hits, 0 walks, 7 strikeouts. He is 55% rostered on CBS. Again, that is Mackenzie Gore. Trevor Story was out of the lineup again on Monday due to illness, but he could be back on Tuesday. Zach Gallen was pushed back in the rotation due to a small cut on his thumb. Taijuan Walker exited Monday's start and will undergo an MRI on his right shoulder. He actually looked really good to start, too. I think it was 2 perfect innings, 4 strikeouts against the Phillies, but, you know, shoulder injury, obviously pretty bad for Taijuan Walker. Zach Wheeler will apparently be limited to 70 or 75 pitches on Tuesday, which is actually more than I thought. So 70, 75, yeah. We might get, you know, 5 innings out of Zach Wheeler. That would be pretty awesome.
That's not much more than any pitcher's been throwing. There have been so far only 6 pitchers who've thrown 90 pitches in all of baseball. So if Wheeler's going to get to 75, then, you know, I mean, I'm not saying he's going to get enough to get a win, but that hasn't, again, that's been the norm the first time through, is these pitchers are still building up.
I wanted to pull up how many quality starts there have been so far. Actually, more than I thought.
Decent number. There were some really, there's been over a dozen 6-plus inning starts, and all of them, as you'd imagine, given how few have thrown more than 90 pitches, were very efficient starts. Yeah.
13 quality starts entering Monday. Alek Manoah added another one to that total. We'll get to Alek Manoah in just a little bit. Jack Flaherty has been cleared to play catch up to 90 feet. He received a PRP injection in his right shoulder 3 weeks ago. Danny Jansen is dealing with some soreness on his left side and was not in the lineup Monday. This could be more playing time for our guy, Alejandro Kirk. Jordan Montgomery should be able to make his next scheduled start this weekend in Baltimore after being hit by a comebacker on Sunday night. A few lineup notes. Scott, you mentioned CJ Abrams was out again Monday going up against the lefty Alex Wood. Giants prospect Elliot Ramos made his debut on Sunday. He went 2-for-3, and then he was benched Monday night against righty Nick Martinez. Seems like he might be part of a platoon situation himself. Jared Kelenic not in the lineup. And we haven't talked about his slow start so far, Scott. He is 1-for-11 with 5 strikeouts thus far. You know, it's hard to take anything away from whatever he's played 3 games so far for Jared Kelenic. But, you know, so far it's been mostly a pretty rough start for a lot of the prospects. I saw that Torkelson, I think, was like 0-for-8 with 6 strikeouts over the weekend. So that was pretty rough as well.
And Julio Rodriguez, 1-for-14 with 7 strikeouts. He did get his first stolen base today, which is nice, but he hasn't been, his hot hitting has not carried over to the regular season. And it's kind of reminding me a little of how Jared Kelenic began his career last year, frankly.
Not great.
I mean, like, I'm not anywhere close to considering dropping Julio Rodriguez, so this isn't about that, but I had hoped for better. You worry about him going into a little bit of a tailspin here. If you know, if he loses confidence or whatever. But they've continued to run him out there, and as long as they continue to do that, I think he'll get hot, and it'll be a distant memory.
If you are listening or watching, you might have heard me make some kind of like weird sound in the background while Scott was talking. I just saw that Jesus Sanchez hit his second home run of the game tonight, and it came off of Raisel Iglesias. So pretty impressive there. I know the first one was a bomb. It was like 439 feet, and now just added a second one. So a double dong performance here for Jesus Sanchez, outfielder with the Miami Marlins. I believe he's pretty available too, Scott. 65% rostered. Do you think that number should be higher for Jesus Sanchez?
I still am not particularly compelled to roster him in like a three outfielder league. But if you're in a five outfielder league and you need home runs, he's a candidate for those, sure. Mm-hmm.
Would you rather have him or Brendan Nimmo? Nimmo was 76% rostered. Like, he's a fine player, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't get that. I would rather have Sanchez. I don't really get the roster rate for Nimmo because, I mean, platoon player who doesn't hit for much power.
Yeah.
Good on base guy, but in the leagues where on base percentage counts for something, where walks count for something, are tend to be the shallower ones. So there just isn't much utility for Nimmo. That roster rate needs to go down for sure.
All right. And the last lineup note I wanted to mention, Bryson Stott and Alec Bohm have alternated starts at third base through each of the Phillies' first four games. Alec Bohm on Monday night went, I believe it was 1-for-1. I'll pull that up again. 1-for-1 with two walks. But he also had three throwing errors in this game. So, you know, I was surprised, Scott, because they're going up against a righty, Taijuan Walker, Bryson Stott, left-handed bat. Just feels like it makes sense, but I don't know. I guess for the time being, they're just going to go with like this alternating Bohm and Bryson Stott, which is, frankly, it's frustrating for both of them if you have either one in fantasy.
Yeah. I'm thinking Bohm may not be long for the job, though. That's my hope. You know, obviously, if you're in the sort of league where you could think about dropping Adele, you could think about dropping Stott, too. I don't think the upside is quite the same. But if you're in something deeper, I'd try to be patient with Stott, too.
All right, before we hit a quick break, make sure to follow our Fantasy Baseball Today Twitter account if you haven't already. It's at FBTPod on Twitter. We're closing in on 25,000 followers, so nice little milestone there for us to reach. And again, if you're watching us live on YouTube, you're watching us on demand, please like this video and subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to talk about Alek Manoah because he was awesome on Monday night. We'll be back right after this. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4x points on your top two eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4x points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
All right, so I've got some pitching notes from Monday. Let's talk about Alek Manoah. Awesome in his first start at the Yankees. 6 shutout, 1 hit, 4 walks, 7 strikeouts. He had 16 swinging strikes on 89 pitches. Scott, what really stood out to me in this start, 17% changeup usage for Manoah. He had 4 of those 16 swinging strikes on the changeup. The changeup was not a good pitch for him last year. I remember when we were doing analysis on him, I said, you know, he has two different iterations of a fastball, a four seamer and a sinker, and his slider. That was basically his go-to last year. Those fastballs and the slider. He tried to use the changeup, but it was not successful. If this turns out to be a, frankly, even an average pitch for him, Scott, that he could just throw against left-handed pitch, left-handed batters, then a Alek Manoah breakout season could be incoming.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know how much room he has to break out because he was already so good last year. True. I think we were expecting a bit of a step back from him, and maybe it's more of a step to the side or maybe even a step forward. Yeah. It was a great debut. The changeup usage, as you said, very encouraging, the results on it. And I'd be excited if I had invested in Manoah, which I don't think I did in any league because that was just a range of pitchers I wasn't drafting.
Yeah,
but I would be excited if I had him.
Manoah was always going around Charlie Morton, Scott, it felt like. So right. I was always targeting Morton. You were targeting Morton. So,
right.
Yeah.
Not that I have any reason to be disappointed in Morton so far.
Right.
But yeah. But yeah, neither. But yeah, Manoah looked great.
A few others I wanted to mention here. Aaron Civale gave up four runs. Two of those were earned, over three and a third against Kansas City. But something to watch here, Scott, his slider, his cutter, his curveball, the velocity was all way down compared to last year. He also changed up the pitch mix a little bit here. He threw his slider a lot more than he did last season. I don't know. It was just kind of a weird start.
I really don't know what to make of the Civale start because, yeah, just to put some specifics on it. So his fastball itself was down 1.4 miles per hour, which is a pretty big drop. But he hardly threw the fastball. And the pitch he used most, the slider, was down 4.3 miles per hour from last year. But he hardly threw the slider last year, and it was most used pitch this start. The cutter was down 3.2 miles per hour. Like, it makes me wonder if that slider is really the same pitch. And, like, he remade his arsenal so much that at least... the usage was so different that it makes me wonder if he completely remade his arsenal the way he remade his delivery last year. I mean, Civale likes to change things up, clearly. So I don't know what to make of this. I mean, he had a pretty strong spring. Because he was pitching in Arizona, we didn't get many StatCast readings on what he was throwing. We're just kind of judging from the results, he looked pretty good. But these... the readings from his first start where we do have the StatCast data is pretty weird.
Yes, weird indeed. I wanted to pull up what his next matchup is to see whether or not we want to keep him in the lineup. If you play in a weekly league, he's probably already locked in there. But in a daily lineup league, he faces the San Francisco Giants on Sunday at home. Would you be okay starting him there, Scott? Or maybe wait and see?
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather not start him. I'm not saying you can't start him, but I want to get a better feel for what he's doing here and how it's going to play. Obviously, the results weren't good in this start. It may have nothing to do with what was going on with his arsenal. Or it may. Maybe something's wrong with him. It's hard to say at this point.
Aaron Ashby of the Brewers, he looked pretty good in relief of Adrian Hauser on Monday. 3 1/3 shutout, 2 hits, 2 walks. He had 4 strikeouts. 10 swinging strikes on 68 pitches. He's still 45% rostered, Scott, and someone who had a lot of helium coming into the season, breakout potential. He comes with prospect status, and the Brewers have done great work developing their pitchers, but we're just kind of in flux right now. We don't know exactly what the role is for Ashby. As of now, it looks like he's just a long reliever, piggybacking, you know, other starters when they can't go too deep, which doesn't have that much value in fantasy. So what are we doing with Ashby? Would you like to hold him?
I'd like to, but it's less of a priority than somebody like Mackenzie Gore, who's going to be used more like a conventional starter when he gets here. I do think at some point this year, Aaron Ashby is going to enter the rotation, and I'm hopeful he'll be good enough to stay there whenever it happens. I mean, maybe he replaces somebody like Adrian Hauser, who he piggybacked with today. And did he end up, They pitched like the same number of innings, right? So they're kind of keeping Ashby stretched out to start by having him go throw 68 pitches. Yeah. So I don't think he's far removed from being a starter, but obviously he hasn't gotten the opportunity yet.
Yep. I have just one share of Aaron Ashby, and it's a 15 team NFBC league where you have seven bench spots, and I've held on to him thus far. So, obviously deeper league, I think he still has a good amount of upside. In formats like that, I'd like to hold Ashby if I can.
I've had to drop Ashby in a shallower league to pick up, I don't even remember who, maybe somebody like Connor Joe. But I'd like, if I had infinite roster space, he'd be on my rosters.
Ranger Suarez made his debut against the Mets, Scott, and he was pretty meh. 2 2/3, 5 hits, 3 runs. Couldn't locate his fastball in this one. Only 2 hard hit balls, so you like to see that. He kept the hard hits down. Was there anything that you noticed from the start for Suarez?
Yeah, I noticed that the average exit velocity against him was 79.4 miles per hour, so he was not hit hard. You know, a short start like this, I wouldn't make too much of it even if he was, but I see no reason to be down on Ranger Suarez despite the results here.
Somebody who was hit quite hard was Waskar Ynoa against the Washington Nationals. He gave up 5 runs over 3 innings. He had just he had 4 strikeouts to 2 walks, which, strikeouts over 3 innings is pretty good. Could not locate anything. I was watching some of the start. He threw his changeup 13% of the time in this one, and he really did not use that pitch much last year. He did not register a single called strike or a whiff on the pitch in this one. Waskar Ynoa is 74% rostered. Scott, would you continue to hold him for now? It's tough because we have all these names emerging, and obviously you have to drop somebody. So Ynoa be expendable for even any of the names we mentioned tonight? Tyone, Lorenzen, Nick Martinez.
I'd drop him for any of them, to be honest. I wasn't the big Waskar Ynoa guy to begin with, but basically since I think he broke his hand last year, right? In a fit of frustration. And ever since coming back from that, he hasn't looked like mixed league material. He was hardly used in the playoffs last year. And they have other directions they could go. I mean, maybe even Spencer Strider. I'm not saying that's on the verge of happening, but he was one of the two. Basically, the Braves used Ynoa, Spencer Strider, and Tucker Davidson today. And Strider was the one who had the best results. He actually lasted the longest, 3 innings and 1/3. He threw 71 pitches. So, he's basically stretched out to start if they wanted to make that change. I'm not sure if developmentally they think he's at that point, but if they're not confident in Ynoa, if they lose confidence in Ynoa, then that's a change that could happen sooner than later. And if not that, maybe they bring up somebody like Kyle Muller. Maybe they give Tucker Davidson a shot. Davidson wasn't good tonight either, but his velocity was way up, which was interesting, and he got a lot of whiffs. So I'd rather see them try Tucker Davidson, frankly. So I'm kind of at a point now where not only am I willing to see Ynoa go to the waiver wire in fantasy, but I'm kind of rooting for the Braves to make a change there too, because I don't think he's a long-term option for them.
Spencer Strider, by the way, too, I'm rooting for him solely because of the mustache, Scott. I mean, that stash, that is a sick stash. Scott, what do I have to do to get you to grow a stash like that?
I don't think I could grow a stash like that.
I don't think I can either. Like, I have it, but it's not like the most thick mustache, admittedly.
Yeah, I haven't really experimented with it in a long time, years and years. Not really my wife's thing, any kind of facial hair. And I was never good at growing it when I did experiment with it. So, I think this is the face. This is going to remain my face for the rest of my life.
Babyface Scott White. But you're saying that are there pictures somewhere of you with facial hair? The experiment, you call it?
No, I don't think it was ever documented in photographs. Like I'd go a week without shaving or something.
Yeah. All right.
And then shave the sides of my face and, kind of have like a scraggly goatee,
I may or may not have offered you money for these pictures, Scott, just to see.
No, I don't think they exist. I'd share them with you if they did. I got nothing to hide.
All right.
No, I don't think they exist.
All right. Well, I'm rooting for it to come back one day. we'll see what we could do. Alex Wood was just okay against the Padres. He gave up two runs with six strikeouts over 4 1/3. But his sinker, his slider, his changeup, they were all up over 1 mile per hour. So I was encouraged to see that for Alex Wood. Wrap up the pitching side here, Scott. Some names in deeper leagues that could be available. Dylan Bundy, 5 shutout. He gave up 1 hit, 1 walk, 2 strikeouts against the Seattle Mariners. Matt Manning with a strong start against the Red Sox. 6 innings, 1 hit, 1 run, only 2 strikeouts. Paul Blackburn, a great start against the Tampa Bay Rays. Really came out of nowhere. 5 shutout with 7 strikeouts in this one. Change up his pitch mix a little bit too. He's only 1% rostered. The last name on this list is Josh Rogers. He was filling in for Anibal Sanchez. 5 1/3, 1 run, 3 strikeouts. Any interest, Scott, in deeper leagues? Bundy, Manning, Blackburn, Rogers.
The one that's kind of interesting to me is probably the... is one of the least heralded of them, and it's Blackburn, actually. Bundy, forget about him. His velocity was down even more. He's averaging 89.9 on the fastball now. And Manning still isn't showing much swing and miss potential, so I don't have much hope for him. Blackburn, the minor league track record isn't good, but this was a really interesting start from him. 12 swinging strikes on 71 pitches. That's a great rate, obviously. The velocity was up across the board, 1 mile per hour on the fastball, even more on some of the secondaries. And you mentioned he changed his pitch mix. He did the simple thing that all pitchers should do, certainly ones that haven't found success yet in the majors. He started throwing his better pitches more. Curveball was the pitch he threw the most, and I think his changeup too. There was two best swing and miss pitches last year, and he threw them a lot more in this start and got a lot more swings and misses. What do you know? So, I mean, because there's really nothing in the track record to suggest Paul Blackburn's going to be a success, I'm not really telling anybody to pick him up except in those very, very deep leagues. But it's something to keep an eye on. He may enter that discussion at some point if he can keep this going.
Yeah, his next start is at Toronto this weekend. So, obviously, that is really rough, but if he shows us anything in that start too, I mean, I think there's going to be real excitement about Paul Blackburn. It looks like he's slated to face the Orioles next week if the schedule plays out the way that it looks right now. He's only 1% rostered. Just a name to watch, Paul Blackburn. Some hitting standouts from Monday, each of Whit Merrifield, Bobby Witt, and Adalberto Mondesi picked up their first steals of the season. Adolis Garcia has 4 walks in 4 games thus far. I was surprised to see that. He had just 32 walks in 149 games last year. He also already has a home run. He has a stolen base. So, all right.
I remember him saying in spring training, you know, I read all these articles from each of the team's official sites, and most of the information is not worth sharing. And I considered this part of that because, you know, it just seemed like talk. But he did say he wanted to be more patient this year. He thought he was too aggressive last year. And so far, very early on, he is practicing what he was preaching, Adolis Garcia. And that could only help his outlook, I think.
I know that the Rangers brought in either hitting coach or hitting instructor that came over from San Francisco. Obviously, the Giants the past couple of years have done great work with Brandon Belt and Brandon Crawford and really getting the best out of their players. So perhaps we can see some of that translate to Adolis Garcia. And I wanted to point out my guy, Nathaniel Lowe, is off to a pretty good start too. 6 for 15, no homers yet, but he has 5 RBI. He's hitting right in the middle of that lineup, right after Seager and Semien and Adolis Garcia. So there could be a decent amount of RBI opportunities for Nathaniel Lowe. Wander Franco went 3 for 4 with a double. He already has 3 hit games. George Springer went 3 for 4 with a double and his second home run. Austin Nola, this was interesting, Scott. He hit his first home run Monday night, and he has started 4 of the Padres' first 5 games. He was their DH on Sunday. There was another game where he led off against a left-handed pitcher, and Austin Nola is just 30% rostered. And we've seen in the past, I believe it was either the shortened 2020 or the year before that, 2019, we've seen some pretty decent upside from Austin Nola as a offensive catcher. So I think if you waited on catcher in a one catcher league, and you wound up with like Omar Narvaez or Carson Kelly, Mike Zunino even, I think I would be all right dropping those guys for Austin Nola.
Yeah, I mean, in a one catcher league, there isn't much downside to dropping any catcher who isn't one of the top seven, let's say. Let's include Garver in there. And Keber Ruiz, maybe Alejandro Kirk. Maybe it's a little deeper than seven. But yeah, I mean, if you got one of those fringy guys, there's not much downside in a one catcher league to swapping him out for the hot hand, because who's gonna go pick up the guy you dropped, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think what you're saying makes sense. Like the top 10 or 12, like Tyler Stevenson, I would still take. Elias Diaz is off to a good start. Alejandro Kirk, that one's close.
I'd take Kirk for the upside. And he's playing enough, even before the injury to Danny Jansen. He's been playing enough.
Yeah, I would take Joey Bart over him too. But again, once we get into like Sean Murphy, Zunino, Vasquez, that's like the next group in my rankings. I would take Austin Nola over those guys. Some deep league hitter ads. Jorge Mateo went 1-for-3 with a walk and his second stolen base and has started all four games for the Baltimore Orioles. And sneaky speed here, Scott. So Mateo, 16% roster. Do you think that number should be higher?
It should be way up. He's somebody I've added to in all my roto leagues. I'm well invested in Jorge Mateo. I mean, as desperate as everybody was for speed on draft day, I'm surprised he hasn't gotten more attention, because it was announced pretty early he'd be the Orioles' everyday shortstop. He's also eligible in the outfield in CBS leagues. And he had a great spring. He's been drawing walks here early in the season. Jorge Mateo, he's got some power in addition to the speed. I'm not sure he has 20 homer power, but he's not, you know, he's not going to be Miles Straw either in terms of home runs. So I would say Jorge Mateo, all roto leagues, he should be rostered, and maybe some deeper head-to-head categories leagues.
Yeah, maybe he can get to, you know, 10 to 15 homers, excuse me, like 20 plus steals. Like if everything works out, the upside outcome for Jorge Mateo, I think a line like that is possible for him. The Nationals put up 11 runs on 15 hits on Monday, backed by a monster game from Michael Franco, 4-for-5 with a first home with his first home run, 5 RBI. What's dead may never die, Scott. Michael Franco, NL only, but probably nothing more than that, right?
Yeah, I've been out on Michael Franco for like a decade. I'm not even sure he's been in the league for a decade, but it feels like that long.
So you were out on him, you know, when he was still in the minor leagues, basically. You're just, nah, it's not, you know, happening.
When his career first started, I was a big Michael Franco guy, but that ended. I was also a big Michael Wacha guy. Mm. Man, how quickly they fell.
Poor guys. The Oakland A's, they also had a monster night on Monday against the Tampa Bay Rays. Seth Brown and Chad Pinder, they each hit their second home runs of the season, and each one is 6% rostered. Chad Pinder has started 3 of 4 games for Oakland. Seth Brown has started all 4 games for Oakland. Scott, anything to see here with Brown or Chad Pinder?
No, but I did want to draw attention to another player in Oakland's lineup, and that is, oh man, I'm glad I looked up the pronunciation before I said it, Sheldon Noisy.
Yep, that is how you say his name. I remember hearing it and I was like, what?
N-E-U-S-E, Noisy. Yeah, he got a start for I don't know that it was his first start, but it was the first time Kevin Smith was out of the lineup, and they're both kind of jockeying for playing time at third base. They both were big this spring, but Kevin Smith's been terrible since the season started. I actually dropped him in one of the leagues where I picked him up. Bunch of strikeouts and poor exit velocity. He puts the ball in the air a lot, but so far he hasn't impacted it very hard in the majors between this year or last. And that combination might work in a smaller park, but I don't know that it's going to work in Oakland, particularly if he's not making contact. Sheldon Noisy, though, got a start, and he continued to produce like he did this spring, 3-for-4 with a home run. And that's a pretty interesting minor league track record, just like Kevin Smith does. So, yeah, we're still talking deep leagues, especially while his playing time appears sporadic, but Sheldon Noisy, and another player to keep an eye on.
All right, yeah, especially in AL-only leagues. This was his first start of the season, he had another pinch hit appearance on Saturday. Cleveland, I wanted to mention, Owen Miller, back-to-back three-hit games there. He started both games at first base. One was against a lefty, one was against a righty. He's 1% rostered. And Oscar Mercado, back-to-back days with a home run, 3% rostered. Those are a few names you could look at again. In AL only, I think if they continue to get consistent playing time, we can maybe talk about them in deeper mixed leagues. Again, the names Owen Miller and Oscar Mercado. The call to the bullpen, Scott. Let's take a look at some bullpens here. Emmanuel Class A gave up a two-run homer with a five-run lead on Monday. He's been not so great his first two outings, so we'll monitor that for him. Baltimore Orioles' Dylan Tate was used in the seventh. Siono Perez was used in the eighth. And then Jorge Lopez was used in the ninth. He allowed one walk with a strikeout, converted the save. Lopez is 4% rostered. Are you looking to add him anywhere?
If I'm desperate for saves, he was the guy Brandon Hyde identified as being the first choice for saves going into the season was Jorge Lopez. And we didn't know how seriously to take it. Obviously, it's the Orioles. How many save chances are they going to get? Lopez has not been a good pitcher to this point in the majors in any role that he's filled. But he got the first save. It was their first save, right? They didn't get... He was used like a conventional closer in this one, just like Brandon Hyde intimated he would be. So I would rank him behind every other prospective closer, behind Daniel Bard. I know Daniel Bard blew a save here on Monday. It was a solo home run. It happens. I still think I'd rather have Bard. I have a lot more confidence in Bard than I do in Jorge Lopez.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was the first save of the season for the Orioles. How about the Brewers, by the way? They are 1-3 with their first four games coming against the Cubs and the Orioles. So my World Series pick looks great through four games. For the Texas Rangers, Joe Barlow pitched in the ninth inning in a tie game. He gave up a solo home run to CJ Cron. And then Greg Holland pitched in the 10th. He gave up two runs and he took the loss. Scott, do you think that Joe Barlow pitching in the ninth inning of a tie game gives you confidence he'll get their next save opportunity?
I don't know that I'd say I'm confident, but that's my read on it. I wish he was better in that one inning. I mean, it was a solo home run he gave up, like I said, for Bard, and he struck out three. And Greg Holland was worse, and Greg Holland probably would be the biggest threat to Joe Barlow getting a save, I would guess, but we'll see.
You mentioned Daniel Bard gave up a game-tying home run to Willie Calhoun in the ninth inning. Willie Calhoun, Scott, was my guy. Like, when I first got into this, like, I was enamored with Willie Calhoun. I thought he was going to be awesome. Has had some really, really tough breaks. No pun intended, but yeah. It was nice to see him hit a home run in this spot. Not if you have Daniel Bard on your team, of course. For the Red Sox, Matt Barnes pitched in the sixth inning of a tie game. His fastball averaged 94 miles per hour, which is down 1.8 miles per hour compared to last season. And that's what we kept hearing about in the spring, Scott, is the velo is down for Matt Barnes. I don't know if this really matters because it was like his first game of the season, but you know, maybe they use him in lower leverage and build up his confidence and then he kind of works back in. But Jake Diekman looked really good in his first save opportunity Sunday night. So I would say that the next save chance goes to Jake Diekman again. What do you think?
Yeah, that's my guess, but it's not with a lot of conviction. Barnes' velocity was down from last year, but according to the player update on our site, it was up from the spring. It was even worse in the spring. So is there enough for them to trust in him as their closer? I mean, with Diekman, you got the whole lefty thing, and they don't have a lot of other lefties in that bullpen. It's hard to confine when you have so few lefties. It's hard to confine that one to the closer role. So I imagine they'd rather not put Diekman there, but it's hard to say how much confidence they have in Barnes at this point.
For the Tigers, Gregory Soto gave up a hit but picked up his first save of the season. Michael Fulmer pitched in the eighth inning. I feel relatively confident Gregory Soto is the guy for the Tigers. For the Phillies, Brad Hand converted a one-run save. Corey Knebel pitched both Friday and Saturday, so probably didn't want to use him a third time in four nights.
It was a 5-run rally for the Phillies to get in that safe situation. So I wasn't watching the game. I don't know if Hand was already warming up, but like Tony Cintia in an opening day, I remember that's how it played out for him, getting that first save for the Reds. And maybe that's partly what happened here too.
Just a classic New York Mets meltdown, by the way. I'm sure I'm going to get some hate for that on Twitter. For the Toronto Blue Jays, Jordan Romano picked up his third. He already has 3 saves. Awesome to see for Jordan Romano.
His velocity is down too, like 1.5 miles per hour. A lot of pitchers. I was writing, it'll be up tomorrow, but I'm writing about the starting pitchers whose velocity is down at least 1 mile per hour. And so I'm focused on the starters, but there are a lot of relievers that's true for too. And, you know, I assume a lot of it has to do with the hurried buildup to the season after, just a 3-week spring training. But surely there are some examples out there yet to be identified within this group that there are other reasons why the velocity's down. And so it's going to be something to keep an eye on for all of them moving forward.
To stream or not to stream, which of these pitchers are we looking to use in daily lineup leagues? Let's start with Tuesday. Yusei Kikuchi at the Yankees, Nestor Cortez versus the Blue Jays, Drew Smyly at the Pirates, Jose Quintana versus the Cubs, Tyler McGill at the Phillies, Eric Lauer at the Orioles, Rich Hill at the Tigers, and Dakota Hudson is going up against the Royals. Do you have 2 or 3 that you like here, Scott?
Yeah, Tyler McGill at Philadelphia. I'd be willing to do that after that impressive first start. And Dakota Hudson against the Royals. Ground ball guy generally keeps runs off the board. Hopefully he'll go the 5 innings needed to get a win, but that's been, you know, it's been hard to find anybody who does that in his first turn.
Wednesday is tough because a lot of the aces in respective rotations are pitching that day. But the ones that I saw that are available, Zach Thompson going up against the Cubs, Chris Paddock going up against the Dodgers. Merrill Kelly was pushed up in the rotation, so now going up against the Astros this week, not the New York Mets. I am okay passing on all 3, Scott.
Yeah, me too. If I was forced to start one, I think it would still be Kelly, even with that tough matchup. But I'd rather not.
All right, Team Name Tuesday. If you have awesome team names that you want to send in, emails fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Put Team Name Tuesday in the subject line. This one's from Quincy Alberts Swanson.
All right.
I like that.
I don't know that I get it. Sorry.
So it's like Albert Pujols' swan song.
Oh, okay.
Alberts Swanson. So.
Thank you for explaining it.
I only know because he emailed describing it, or else I'd probably be in the same boat as you.
If it's obscure musical references, even if it's not so obscure musical references, we need Chris here for those.
We were talking beforehand, and I said exactly that. I was like, when we do Team Name Tuesday without Chris here, Scott and I are just left like staring at each other like, what's going on? I don't know. What does this stuff mean? These are from Colin.
And I don't think Chris is going to be on many Tuesday shows.
Right.
So, that's wonderful.
Maybe we've got to move it to like Team Name Wednesday or something like that. Doesn't have the same feel. These two are from Colin, the Super Saiyans. So that's a Dragon Ball Z reference. Saiya Suzuki, but opposite. The Super.
You're all Saiyans. Over that one, Frank.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, big Dragon Ball Z fan growing up. I still frequent a little Dragon Ball Z action. Hitting Barlow the belt. Oh, okay. That's good.
Right. Yeah, I get that one.
There's a lot going on there. This one's from Jif, Beer and a Stot. Nothing, Scott.
Is it good? You tell me.
It's like, you know, beer and a shot, but you know, Seth Beer and Bryce and Stott. I like it. These are from Greg. I don't think we're gonna get these. The mayor of the barrio. The mayor of the barrio. I think that was some kind of musical reference for Chris, but I don't know.
It's on teams where he has Vlad.
Yes, on teams where he has Vlad, the mayor of the barrio.
Okay.
I don't see anything on Google. Send us in, email us, and let us know what it means. On teams where I don't have Vlad, hey, it's Enrico Palazzo.
Cool. I'm sorry.
I think this is from Naked Gun. No surprise. I've never seen it. Okay. I know it's a very popular movie.
No, I haven't either. I've seen clips from it, but I've never watched the whole thing. Gotta say.
From our buddy Jack, who he crushed last year with the team name Tuesdays, Day Sclafani Valentine. I don't know if there's a reference that I'm supposed to know. Probably. Avengers Savali War.
All right.
That was pretty good.
I at least get what he's referring. I understood that reference.
Yeah. There you go, Scott. Yeah. We got one. This was from Mark. Fetch the Whip Runners. Yep. That was the one he said Chris would know.
Okay.
Don't know. I'm all about that on base.
Okay.
He writes... in honor of Mark Howard of the great Milpitas A's. I don't know anything about that, but I just kind of assumed it was from the song All About the Bass. I'm all about the bass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. I know that one.
This was from Brian. Hats for Bats. Solid. From our buddy Jamie, who is in one of the podcast leagues. These are all of the Adam Sandler reference. Love them. The Wedding Springer.
Mm-hmm.
Happy McGilmore.
Okay.
Eight Crazy Wainwrights.
Okay.
The Longest Hilliard.
Yeah, a remake, but yeah.
DeGrom Ups. It's supposed to be Grown Ups, but...
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't really like that one anyway.
That's a stretch.
Yeah, the movie I didn't like. The name's okay. Little Nicky Lopez. A+, love it.
Yeah, that's my favorite one from this slate, I think, so far.
And then the last one is Mr. Freeds.
Okay.
I like those. From Russ, Brindor's Palace O'Dingers. It looks like, I don't know, Lindor and Bryce together, Brindor's Palace O'Dingers. I don't know. From Jeff, Third Degree Burns. All right, straightforward.
Yeah.
From Cody, Vladdy's Wagon and Pot of Goldschmidt.
Yeah, they work.
The last
I acknowledge that they work.
The last one is from Jared. Cruising, bruising, and you losing.
Oh, going for a rhyming scheme there. Only one of those is a name, though, right, Cruz?
Yeah, I think he pointed out the L-U-Z is for Lizardo. Who would the B-R-U-Z be for? Cruising, bruising, and you losing. Is their name B-R-U-Z?
Baseball? Don't know. I don't think so. Let me double check here. Typing in a couple different search engines. No, I think it was just, I think it just fit the rhyming scheme.
Fair enough. All right. Well, as you guys can see, Scott and I are terrible at Team Name Tuesday, but continue to send them in and we'll have fun and we'll read them out and we can, you know, make ourselves look foolish and we'll have some fun. We're going to wrap there. For Scott and Frank, thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye. Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com.